Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Scott, who is here to speak with us about his experience of working with the Big Bamboozle. Welcome, Scott.
Thanks, Jen.
Hey. So I thought I'd just start with, you know, the background for anyone who might be listening to Open Air for the first time, because I'm guessing anyone who's been around for any length of time knows that we are together as a Sangha this year walking through a book that Sherry and Ashwini published last, October, something around then, The Big Bamboozle, which highlights 12 of the primary ways that egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate bamboozles us into suffering. And so as a whole Sangha, we're walking through the book, which is a 12-month kind of trajectory where each month you work with one of the bamboozles. And last month we just finished fear. And so, Scott, I think you were going to share with us your experience of working with that one.
Yeah, thank you. And just what you were saying about the structure of the book, it's so huge, actually. Well, especially, well, probably with all of them, actually. But with fear, the thing I noticed the most is that we're never really given any space to actually look at what fear is. It's just like, well, I don't like to get in front of people and speak publicly, or airplanes, that kind of freaks me out. And we never get a chance to actually look at, well, what is that? You know, what's the process there? And the structure of the book is so great. You know, there's the chapter that's just so rich, you know, and insightful, and directs us to look at all kinds of things about fear. And then, as you said, there's these four weekly assignments. So we have an entire month with support, you know, of the book, of Open Air. You can call in and talk to Sherry. If you have a weekly sitting group, that's what, you know, we're doing there. People on coach calls, on reflective listening buddies, and then, of course, getting on the recorder with the mentor and doing the assignments, we actually have a chance to look at what's going on here.
And you know what's neat about what you were saying is that, so, yeah, we don't get to stop and look at the process of fear. And chances are everyone, whether you're doing awareness practice or not, has had the experience of moving through something they're afraid of and the exhilaration that comes with that and the, you know, everything that comes with that. But without stopping to actually get a glimpse at the process, it's not necessarily applicable the next time. And we're kind of back at ground zero.
Uh-huh.
I was just seeing that when you were saying that having a chance to really look at the process and deconstruct it is a huge benefit.
Yes, it is a huge benefit. And as you were saying, you know, once we catch on to the process, we don't have to go and tackle every piece of content that we're afraid of.
Right.
We can see how it works. And, you know, my experience of seeing how fear works, it just starts to kind of fall apart. You know, there's, it's kind of what I've heard Sherry say about her teacher said, which is nothing holds up under scrutiny.
Right.
So bringing awareness via the assignments really gives us a chance to see, like, you know, what is it? You know, what is this thing that I either, you know, basically my experience of fear from a condition point is I'm either avoiding the thing or I'm trying to control it.
Right. Right.
And without questioning, well, what is it, what am I actually afraid of? And does it need to be avoided or does it need to be controlled?
Yeah. So it gives you a completely, as with everything, you know, duality was one of the first, we've covered duality. So we know that that's a major building block of conditioning, and so it will try to have it be one or the other of those things, like it either has to be avoided or it has to be controlled. And then it sounds like in what you're describing that in having that willingness to turn right towards it and look directly at it, all these other options become available to us.
Exactly. And so I had a concrete example about that. The last, all the assignments are really asking us to kind of look at it and question and, you know, what's actually going on here. There's some nice places to record some encouragements and things like that. And then I think the last assignment was basically go do something you're afraid of and really watch, you know, the voices ramp up, see what's going on, the feelings, the sensations, and the story. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't, you know, I just was like, well, what is it? You know, I think the example was something like, you know, pay a compliment to someone, well, I don't want to do that because they might be rude to me and then I'll feel rejected.
Right.
And I've been working with this physical content around my foot and my toe. And basically what's been going on for a long time is just avoiding kind of these, like, it's not working right and something's not right, but I'm it's fine. I don't really want to look at it. Or the other side of the duality, let's just get it fixed. Well, who do I need to see? What do I need to do? Do we need surgery? Okay, go at it.
Right.
And what dropped in was what the thing I think that I'm ultimately, you know, the identity is ultimately afraid of doing is going up against the voices and really seeing what's going on. And so I, one night I just went to sit down and do this assignment, pulled my sock off and started just paying attention to the foot and to the toe and just paying attention to the sensations and watching all the conversation come up around it and not going with the conversation, but just simply watching it.
Wow.
So, you know, like one thing I was doing was just feeling pressing on different parts of the toe. And then I just got to watch this conversation of like, well, that didn't hurt there. And then I heard like, oh, that's good. And then I heard a, oh, that's not good. If you can't feel it doing that, then it's way deep in the marrow of the bone. And then it was kind of like, well, which is it, conditioning? Is it a good thing or is it a bad thing? And I just got to, you know, there was like some sensation in one of the knuckles of the toes. And it was like, wow, what is that, you know? And it was like, well, is it in the big knuckle of the toe? I'm like, well, I'm not actually sure exactly where it's coming from. Well, is it? And I just watched these kind of like tactics of there's a problem, when really all there was sensation. And there was this big push to make meaning out of any feeling that's going on in the foot. And of course, to get the human afraid, oh, okay, well then what do I need to do? Which means, you know, be in the conversation with egocentric karma conditioning self-hate.
Wow. I mean, that's an amazing process you're laying out there. You know, what's so clear in the way you describe it, Scott, is that, so you head down this awareness track, right? This track of paying attention on a very minute level. And just the way you describe it so articulately shows how what ego is attempting to do is desperately grab at that attention. So with each thing
yep.
you notice, it then comes in to, as you say, try to make meaning or, okay, what are we going to do about that? Or, you know, so all the things that would take your attention off of just being here with what is so right now in this moment.
Exactly. And I think something in the chapter, the beginning before the assignments, was something like, When we get out of that conversation, you know, when we start really just stepping into that awareness perspective, then life can guide us. You know, then all that support and care and love can come in. And that's exactly what started to happen. Instead of being in a fear story or, you know, ignoring or fixing, just all this insight around, well, just that process for one, but even just around the foot, you know, well, how about we try this? You know, how about we just go for a walk and really pay attention? Oh, we have this foam roller. Should we try that? And all these things that were actually a huge assistance to the physical pain and to the human who's waking up, it was just a gigantic step in terms of, oh, I fear it only exists in a conversation. I don't have to be in that conversation. I don't have to reference conditioning about my toe or anything else in life. In fact, I'd really like to be looking to guidance from life. And that's possible. And here it is. It's happening right now.
Right. Exactly. It's happening right now. And whenever, you know, I hear people say things like that, I just think, boy, and that is the gift of recording and listening, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Because there, mm-hmm. I can record that experience so that I can train myself, in a sense, to keep doing exactly what I'm doing in this moment.
Yeah, and that reminds me, I didn't say that, when I was looking at the foot and just seeing what's going on at sensation level, and I had the recorder on, and I think that's the huge difference. You know, we don't have control over what happens to us,
no.
But I think the chapter said something like this, too, about, but we can be with it. And and turning on the recorder was a turning to being with.
Yeah. Oh, it is.
And that's everything.
It's everything. Yep. Yep. Yes, and that the other thing that arises with that for me is the support of the whole Sangha, the support of the book, the structure of the book, and then the support of everyone's doing this. So, you know, there you are. You've got this thing going on with your foot, and it occurs to you, and there's the willingness to use that structure that we're all doing to see what you see about it. And then all of this, you know, everything that there is to see, you know, you begin down that journey of, wow, life being able to communicate with you because you're no longer in the conversation with conditioning about it.
And it does really help, Jen, to know that there are all kinds of folks out there doing the same thing. Yeah. You know, they're all paying attention. They're all doing what they're afraid of with support. And that does just give us the encouragement, you know, that extra little, you know, we can do this too. You know, I know everyone's behind me.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, we're all warriors together.
We're all warriors together, yeah.
Excellent. Well, we're at the 5 o'clock hour, Scott, so was there anything else before we end that you wanted to add?
The only thing I wanted to add is, you know, there might be some folks who haven't been doing it, and, you know, conditioning would love to say, well, you're behind, you can't even, it's too late. And you can jump in anywhere, truly. You can jump in right where we are. You know, I've had conversation with folks who are, you know, doing 2 times ago, and that's totally fine. You know, the point is just to participate and use the structure, and again, we're doing it together as Sangha.
Yeah. In fact, I confess, as we're having this conversation, I saw a big thing about fear, and it made me think, you know what, I might want to go back and do that month again.
I'm with you on that. I'm definitely with you on that.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thanks so much for being with us, Scott.
You bet. Thank you.
Okay. Good night.
Bye-bye.
And Michael, we'll turn it over to you.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Scott. And good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air. It's my pleasure to be joined this afternoon by Jen, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome, Jen.
Thank you. Nice
that
to
was
be
a
here.
Fun conversation.
So soon. I don't usually get to facilitate this many times, but Sherry is on retreat in North Carolina. So they are, I believe, in group discussion probably as we speak.
Wow. Wow. So practice going on simultaneously in many places.
Isn't that fun?
Yep.
See, we've been talking about it on the announcements for weeks, and now here it is. They're all there in that beautiful location that we've been raving about.
Yes, yes. And it's interesting, Jen, because I was listening to an archive over lunch today, and it was talking about how there are all of us practicing all the time, all over the world.
Yeah.
And it just gave me this wonderful sense of support, which is great.
Yeah, just like what Scott was just talking about.
Yes,
you
yes,
know, that place
exactly.
of knowing that everyone is doing it. And so it gives us the... It gives us that, you know, the extra enthusiasm, but it also gives us that extra support when it's, you know, we feel like we're kind of slogging through.
Yes, yes, yes. And I loved all of your conversation, and I especially enjoyed having such a clear view of the process and a specific content as an example.
Isn't that helpful?
With Scott, and he's looking at his foot. Yeah, it's just so helpful.
Yep. I really appreciate that, too. Yeah, it just seems like when people have that, the ability to lay out the very concrete things in their life that they're using to
yes.
practice with, I just feel like it's so helpful for everyone.
Yes, and when you said that, I just had an image of kind of like a stencil or the process gets overlaid on the content.
Yeah.
And so once it becomes clear about the foot, I can pick up that stencil, that process of fear, and then I can put it on any content in my life to see how that works.
That's very good. And so taking the Sangha piece of it, Scott
yes.
essentially just gave us the gift of a stencil that we can
yes.
all go pick up and carry for
yes.
us. Yeah, that's a good image.
That is so good. That
yeah.
is so great.
Yeah.
Boy, are we lucky, huh?
Ah, so lucky.
Yes. And I have announcements here, unless there's something else you'd like to start us with.
No, Great. Let's do the announcements.
Okay. Join Sherry and Ashwini in a workshop in Asheville, North Carolina on May 7th for an exploration of the teachings in their latest book, The Big Bamboozle. No registration is required for this event, which will be at Malaprop's bookstore.
So that's got to be this Saturday, huh?
Yes. Yeah, is that right? The 7th, today's the 3rd?
Yeah. It's
yeah.
coming right
okay.
up.
Great. Coming
and I
right
don't
up.
Think they're staying yeah. sticking around in North Carolina too long, so I think it is right after the retreat. So that's a fantastic opportunity, you know, as we were just talking about the Big Bamboozle, to be able to explore that right there with the very authors. That's a unique opportunity.
Yes. Yeah. A great privilege. And a new email class starting May 13th entitled Enneagram and Relationships will focus on how suffering is created and maintained in our most challenging relationships and how awareness can help us move toward authentic connection.
Very excited about that one.
Oh, me too. Me too.
Yeah. The Enneagram always adds such a fun flavor.
Yes, it does. And now we have a new twist on it, it seems like, with relationships.
Yeah, a new lens. Yep.
Yes. Rumi's poems echo the deepest longing of our hearts. Join Sherry and Ashwini in a joyful exploration of awareness practice through Rumi's lyrical poetry and practical wisdom at the Zen of Rumi Retreat, which is June 20 through 25th. In Carmel, California. And only a few slots are available for this retreat.
I was going to say, yeah, it's small.
Yes.
Is it opened, Michael? The registration is open?
That's an excellent question, and I will check when you are talking
okay.
to a caller.
Right. Because I will tell you, that is, talk about a unique opportunity. Wow. For people who have not been to, we haven't been to Carmel in years because it is such a small facility, so we can't
yes.
have a lot of folks there. It is stunning, unbelievably gorgeous, right across the street from, am I taking all your, is there a description that I'm ruining right now?
No. Okay. No. You're
it's
good.
Across the street from the ocean, and just truly, I think it might be my favorite place on the planet, and I've been to a lot of places on the planet.
Oh,
so
wow.
that is a unique opportunity, for sure.
Yes, yes. And I do see on the website here, there's Zen of Rumi Retreat, and there's a link to find out more on the website here. So that's great.
Yep.
Yes. And the foundational There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat in North Carolina, June 30th through July 7th, offers an opportunity to do the compassionate and courageous work of freeing oneself from the ravages of conditioning and self-hate. This retreat is perfect for beginners and can be repeated any number of times.
And is taking place at that same beautiful location where folks are practicing as we speak.
Oh, great. Wonderful. And a reminder that we are on Bamboozle number 4, Feeling Bad, assignment for week 3.
And diligently practicing not feeling bad.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. And for these and all other practice opportunities, visit schedule.livingcompassion.org. And if you would like to speak with Jen today, press *6 and then 1 to make guest show. And a focus on one topic and about 5 minutes is super helpful to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Shall we get started, Jen?
Let's do it.
Okay, let's do it. First caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
I think that might be me.
Sounds like it.
My name is Carolyn. I'm a first-time caller, although I'm not new to the teaching.
Great.
Because I've been listening to Open Air for a couple of years, doing email classes, taken a couple of retreats, and been to the monastery.
Yes.
And I'm kind of nervous because I didn't expect to get on right away on my very first try.
Especially first, so just feel free to take a moment to breathe. No hurry.
Okay. Okay. Well, I'm having a particularly challenging time right now because I have two elderly parents in their mid-90s, and I'm living with them and caregiving them. And they're both failing in health right now. Just a couple of days ago, my dad had a mini stroke, and today he fell twice. And as the main caregiver and the only family member here, we're a small nuclear family. I don't have siblings or a partner or children, so I'm kind of it. I'm just finding myself thinking all the time about, okay, what happens next? What's the next sign of decline going to be? Waking up in the middle of the night and having all these dire thoughts and trying to, well, coming back to the breath, coming back to this here now, then being pulled out again by the thoughts. Their conditioning, of course, is trying to scare me to death with all the horrible outcomes that there could be. And then coming back again and going out again. So just because it's particularly challenging right now, I thought I would call in and see if you have any ideas of how I can stay more in the present and not get so pulled away by these scary thoughts all the time.
Mm-hmm. And are you seeing, Carolyn, what an incredible miracle it is that you're able to practice as much as you are?
I guess probably not.
I mean, that's the first thing that just astonishes, you know, just that, wow, because you are in a challenging situation, you know. And I'm sure you've heard us talk about before that, you know, we practice all the time so that when we're in the really challenging situations, practice is there for us. And
right,
you clearly must have been practicing in order to have any practice be available to you right now, because, of course, the conditioned thing would be hunker down and survive, and the coping behaviors would be off the roof, and practice would be out the window, and no way am I going to call the radio show. I have way too much going on to do that. What good is it going to do anyway? And, right?
Yeah. No, you're right. I have certainly been practicing and very much keeping in mind the fact that, yeah, when it gets tough, I'm going to really need it. So let me practice when it's not that tough. And I definitely have some, you know, coping behavior, unconscious or not so conscious coping behaviors going on, like too much eating of chips and chocolate and stuff like that. But I've been thinking all day about calling the radio show because I knew that that was something that really could help me. Chocolate's not going to help, but the radio show could.
Right. Another huge awareness. I mean, it can seem like it's not, but it is. It's everything, isn't it? To have that, yes, do our coping behaviors kick in? Do we turn to that? Yes. But to have the awareness that, you know what, here's the real scoop. That chocolate is not really going to be of long-term assistance to me.
Yeah, that I'm really clear on.
And reaching out to Sangha, that will.
Yes,
huge. Yeah. So, you know, Carolyn, do you have a sense of, you know, the old, if you had a good friend who was going through this situation, how you might approach her, what you might offer to her? And can I tell you the reason I ask in particular?
Yeah. Sure.
Because when you say that you talked about the voices in the middle of the night, and then you talked about that there's a conversation around things like, gosh, what's going to come next, and, you know, what's going to be the next thing to fail, and et cetera. So if you were with a close friend who was in this situation, and she was telling you about, you know, and then this happened today, and this is how this is going, I can imagine in 100 years you would never say to her, oh, my God, what's going to happen next? What do you think is going to fail next? Right?
Right, right.
You would never have your attention on you would never have your attention on that with her.
Right.
Yeah. I'm guessing the attention would more be on just wanting to support her like crazy and to acknowledge what an amazing job she's doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And
because it's one of those places where it's that old, gosh, you know, we can picture it with a friend or a whoever. If I could change the circumstances for you, God knows I would. Because it is a hard situation, you know. But I can be here with you in it. I can't change it, but I can be here with you in it. And two things about that. One is, when I'm here with you in it, just like Scott talked about in the Good News Update, sometimes when we drop into that place of compassion and acceptance and just being right here, because in the situation you're describing, it requires us to be present, right? I mean, there's a lot going on. There's a high level of presence that can be called for in that situation. And so when we're right here, sometimes other things occur to us that might not have otherwise occurred to us, things that mm-hmm. might actually assist us on the level even of content.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other piece of that is, you know, that place of, gosh, if I could change it, I certainly would. And yet, in the biggest picture, maybe not. Because so often, you know, and we've all had this experience, we go through really hard places in our lives, really hard content areas, and come through it with a sense of, wow, that was huge. I learned so much in that process.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, I do know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think another part of what's challenging for me is that neither of my parents is very expressive emotionally, so they don't talk about what's going on. And I have to ask questions and sort of pull things out of them to really get anything. And neither of them will ever admit to being depressed at all at what's going on with them. And that's fine, but I feel because they don't talk about what's going on, I feel sort of constrained from talking about what's going on with me, and I don't feel very connected with them. And particularly my father is, I sometimes when I've been in the car driving him to a doctor's appointment, I've tried to ask him questions about his life or about what it feels like to be older and not be able to do all the things that he used to do. And we just don't seem to have much of a conversation. And so I find myself wanting it to be different, wanting to feel a connection that I'm not feeling.
Right.
And I know that's a recipe for suffering, wanting it to be different. And I don't quite know what to do with that, how to let go of it, of that yearning for a closer connection while I still have them, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me ask you this. Do you have a recording and listening practice?
I do.
Because that's really the thing, as you were talking, that was coming up for me. I mean, I look to my own experience of places where there is that, you know, that longing or a feeling of lack or and knowing that ultimately, even if we are able to feel like we're getting that externally, sort of,
mm-hmm.
you know, we almost need to use quote marks in the air there, that ultimately each of us is really, it's the connection with the mentor that seems to make the biggest difference for each of us in the end. And then I just wonder about even connecting with the mentor about being able to express that. You know, gosh, you know, it's the end of my parents' lives and I'd really love to connect with them and I'm feeling some frustration that I'm not able to. And then being able to be heard by the mentor And having the mentor offer you that connection that it sounds like you're yearning for with your parents.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily take that away, right? So, again, with the piece of sometimes when we really move into something with acceptance and compassion, there are other things that occur to us. So it might be in those conversations with the mentor, there are things that the two of you, it occurs to you of ways to approach your parents that might actually facilitate some of that connection you're looking for. You know, maybe yes, maybe no. But ultimately, to be able to have that connection with the mentor such that even if you're not getting what you wish you had with your parents, that's okay. You know, because you're cared for, you're listened to, you're attended to, you're unconditionally loved.
Yeah, you know, what I'm getting here is the importance of me really staying in close touch with the mentor through this challenging time. Because okay. Some days, you know, I don't necessarily talk to the mentor every single day or listen to my recordings every day because there's so much going on.
Yeah.
And so what I'm hearing you say is that is what I need to really sustain me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Regardless of what happens with them and
yeah.
between them and me.
Exactly. And to really get it that, you know, I would guess in the situation you're in, that's a recipe for everyone else is more important than Carolyn.
Yeah.
And so, gosh, I mean, the relationship with the mentor, I mean, that's going to take second chair at best, right?
Yeah.
But to realize, I mean, in fairness to Carolyn, my gosh, she is really, she's in a hard situation. She's giving a lot. And so to make that a really important priority in the day, you know, even if it's a few minutes here, if you, you know, an appointment, wake up in the morning or at lunchtime
yeah.
or, you know, after everyone's gone to bed or whatever the time frames would be, to make those firm appointments. And that's her time. She gets to have that time.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember Sherry once saying a sentence that really struck me. She said, the most important thing in your life is practice. And it's so easy to let go of that or lose sight of it. And so
right.
what you're saying now is just reminding me of that.
Yeah, exactly so. Yeah, that's
yeah.
a perfect way of describing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it doesn't, the beautiful thing about it is it doesn't exclude anything else. In fact, it blossoms everything else in my experience.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I know what
yeah.
you mean.
Yeah.
Jen, thank you so much. I'm already feeling lighter after talking to you.
Oh, thank you, Carolyn. That was a pleasure. That's a great topic. Thank you for being willing to call in and share it.
Well, I'm so glad I got through to you. Thanks a whole lot.
Me too. Take good care.
All right. Good night.
Okay. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Carolyn. That was an amazing conversation, Jen. So helpful.
Oh my gosh. I mean, talk about the, you know, we were just talking about that topic of generously offering the particulars of what people are practicing with. God, that's such a good example.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. And what I got out of it was the really to recognize the heroic path that we're on and to appreciate the heroic practitioner.
Truly.
It's great.
Truly. Yep. Amen.
Yes. Amen. And we have another caller here, Jen.
Okay, great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Shannon.
Hey, Shannon.
Oh, hi. This is my first time calling, so I'm a little nervous, I'm sorry.
Oh, very good. That's absolutely par for the course.
So I've been kicking around in the quicksand of my conditioning for a few days,
uh-huh.
and it's mainly intense shame and worthlessness that I'm letting suck me down. And I know intellectually that there's nothing wrong with me and all of that, but
uh-huh.
I can't seem to allow the experience of it, and I stop listening to the voices is an obvious advice, but I guess I need a baby step of something actionable.
So the first thing we always like to clarify is it's not your conditioning, right? And the reason that's so key is because that helps us begin to take that tiny yet critical step back of realizing it's not personal.
Okay.
So so you said shame, and what was the other?
Worthlessness. And while I know where it comes from and I kind of know how it got triggered, that's just, it's not useful information. It's just more analysis.
And yes, agreed. Now, does it feel like you truly see that, or is there a sense of you're kind of believing the content? Like, there is kind of really
something. I do believe
the
content, yes.
There is a sense of believing the content?
Yes.
Yeah. And do you record Muslim?
I just started.
Okay.
And I don't even know where to start on.
Yes. Okay.
This.
Okay, good. The reason I ask very specifically is that especially in that place where what I hear, tell me if this is accurate, is you know quite a bit about practice. And so you know that something like shame, worthlessness, that everyone gets attacked by voices that are trying to talk them into that. You know, feeling ashamed, feeling worthless, feeling like there's something wrong with them, whatever it is. And that you get it, that that's not actually true, and yet that doesn't seem to be having a huge impact on your life experience.
Yes, exactly.
And that there's a sense of, on some level, it kind of is true that I'm, you know, should be ashamed of whatever it is, or I am kind of worthless.
Right.
And so what can be really helpful in that place is, let's see if I get that, there's going to be a double negative here, but not try to not feel that way.
Okay.
Right? So in other words, it is how I'm feeling.
Yeah.
Right? There is a sense of believing the content. And the fact that intellectually I hear, okay, it's possible to drop the voices and, you know, that isn't really true, in a way, that's just two sides of the duality ping-ponging back and forth, and it's not terribly helpful. Yeah?
Right, yes.
And that's where recording and listening can actually be quite useful in a situation like this. Because, have you ever heard the two-handed recording described?
No, I haven't.
Okay. So, first let me ask, do you get the Practice Everywhere tweets where you can, on your phone, you can subscribe to getting little practice messages that come in like 3, 4, 5 times a day?
Oh, no, I can do that.
Okay. So the reason I asked in particular was that the other day there was a link to a part of an archive from Open Air where Sherry laid out the recording and listening two-handed exercise. But it's also on the recording and listening website, which is recordingandlistening.org. And you can find it described there. But I'll give you the short version also now, which is that you're going to hold the recorder in the right hand, and you're going to let that person, let's just call her a person for now, you're going to let that part of you who feels that way, who feels ashamed and worthless, you're going to let her talk. And to the best of your ability, not censor her. So not, well, yeah, but I mean, you know better, or, but it's not really true. You just need to drop the voices, or none of that. Just, and to the best of your ability, to just let her talk about what she's feeling. What she's feeling. So not so much go on and on about, and then I did this, that bad thing, and then I did that bad thing, but more, what's the feeling? What's going on with her emotionally? You know, like you were talking to, you know, a really good friend who you trusted completely, who you knew wasn't going to be judgmental of you, and you just wow, you just wanted to tell someone what was going on. So you're going to make that recording, holding the recorder in your right hand. And then you're going to hit stop. You're going to switch the recorder, put it in the left hand, and then you're going to listen to it. And you're going to listen to it from that same place I was just describing, which is that you now you are the really good friend who loves Shannon completely unconditionally, has no opinions about how she should be or, you know, any of that. She just loves her, you know, everything about her. And you're going to listen from that perspective. And then once the recording is finished, just to pause, just be with it for a minute. And then to just record, offer her what arises for you. In the same way, again, you would to a really close friend who's having these feelings. Someone who it's completely all right with you that she's feeling this way, that she feels shame and she feels like she's worthless, and you're not going to try to talk her out of that, right? Now, don't feel that way. Buck up. But so it's fine with you that she feels that way, but you can see it isn't true. You can see there's nothing for her to be ashamed of. You can see that she's far from worthless. And, you know, maybe even tell her what you love about her and how, you know, how much you love how she this is and she that. And whatever it is that arises for you, you're going to record that. And then that's the recording that you're going to listen to a lot.
Hmm. Okay.
Can you get a sense of it?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Hmm. And as I lay that out, what comes up for you?
It sounds difficult. It does. I do understand the part about listening as if I were that trusted, loyal friend who just loves that person.
Yep.
That makes total sense to me.
Yep.
It would be a good practice for me to say those loving things, and this is a good time to start.
Yes. Shannon, that's perfect. That is really well articulated, because what I project you're hinting at, I don't know if this is what you're saying, but that there's resistance that comes up to it.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
And the thing is, if we think the resistance is not okay, we're right back in the same boat. But if we get
right.
it, right?
Right.
But if we get it that the resistance, of course there's resistance. Of course. Because what we're talking about is, so the voices have a lock on the system, right? If they can make us feel ashamed, worthless, something's wrong with us, I'm not okay, I'm this way, I'm that way, and that they get that ball rolling and it basically just rolls right over us, then, you know, they can do whatever they want to us. But if we start a practice of being with ourselves, it's exactly like we were just talking about with Carolyn. You know, so with Carolyn, there's a, quote, external content. What you're talking about is an internal content. There's this thing, very difficult thing happening inside your own head. And so if we start a practice of being with Shannon as all of that's going on, it's a bad place for the voices. Because what they know is ultimately they'll lose power. So what they're going to do along the way is just kick up a huge storm. And it will take the form of, this is too hard. I don't want to do it. It's not working is a huge one. Right? And that's
right.
Why I so appreciate you saying what you said a minute ago, pointing at that there is that resistance arising. Because if we know that, then we realize, oh, right, that's why we call it practice. Right, because what I'm going to do is I'm going to start practicing doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And the key thing is to have no conversation about how I'm doing, right? Am I doing the recordings well in the way I'm supposed to? And also, this is subtle, but also not looking to see, is it working?
Mm.
Can you get a sense of that?
Oh, and that's a good one for me to remember. Yes, thank you.
Mm. Because if we look to see, is it working? We're always going to be looking to conditioning to answer the question, and the answer is always going to be no.
Right. Right.
So I can promise you the willingness to stay in there and to keep practicing that, just that skill, I say just, there isn't, it should, it's not just, to practice that huge skill of letting her talk, of listening, and then being willing to offer back what you know is true. And if you have to, you know, insert someone you really do love unconditionally, or a pet. People often use pets because pets are so easy, you know, they don't talk back, so it's easy to love them unconditionally. So it's not cheating to picture someone like that as you're offering that compassion and that unconditional love.
It's easy for me to picture someone else.
It's easy for you?
Yes.
Great. And the reason that's so great is that then you have, the fact that you have access, ready access to it, that's a huge part of the battle right there. And then all it is, again, I shouldn't use the word all, then what it is a practice of being able to turn that to Shannon, which again, the reason for most of us that's such a huge challenge is the voices are dead set against it.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a absolutely worthy endeavor, I can promise you. Have you heard about we just announced it, but the There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat?
I did hear about it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look like something I would be able to do.
Yeah. So, and I don't know what the whys are around that, but you might just start looking at that as an intention for yourself, because I think you would really, really enjoy it. And by enjoy, I'm using that term very broadly.
Yes, I understand.
Good. See, I'm telling you, Shannon, you're made for it. You would love it. But it's an amazing experience, and it speaks exactly to what we're talking about this afternoon.
Okay.
So, yeah. Yeah. Well, again, I just have to say thank you for calling in so generously and courageously, being willing to share your process with us.
No, thank you so much.
Yeah. Take good care and call us again, okay?
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Shannon. You're listening to Open Air. We have the privilege of being joined tonight by Jen, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. And that was another amazing conversation, Jen.
These people have been holding out on us, these first-time callers.
Wow. Wow. Courageous and skilled and willing.
Amazing.
Fabulous.
Amazing. Yep.
Jen, we're going to break now and hear from our coaching program, and then we'll be back for more callers.
Perfect. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you.
The practice theme for this year is Anjali, emptying your teacup. As the Zen story teaches, when we're full of ego's preferences, opinions, likes and dislikes, there is no room for the guidance and clarity of awareness. Through weekly coaching, regular commitments, and the practice of recording and listening, we train to empty our teacup and be open to life. Zen awareness coaches are trained by Sherry Huber to offer individual coaching about life issues and awareness practice in general. We hear from new folks and old-timers alike that awareness coaching provides the support they need to deepen their practice. And since coaches donate a percentage of their fees, getting a coach assists in supporting practice. To request a Zen awareness coach, go to livingcompassion.org, click on the pink lotus, then programs to find Zen awareness coaches. Make 2016 the year of emptying your teacup and having the life your heart desires.
Welcome back to Open Air, and we have the next caller here, Jen.
Okay, very good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Jen and Michael. This is Jeff in North Carolina.
Hey, Jeff.
Hi.
How are you?
Hey, good. Good. How are you tonight?
Very good, thank you.
That's great. I think I'd like to kind of talk about something that was talked about on the Good News Update. In terms of, I really like a lot of things in there. But what I want to pick up on, I think, is, in my words, Scott was talking about looking at fear as a process, or you know, what it is, rather than you know, kind of breaking it down, really examining it, as opposed to just there's this thing. Again, this is my words, but this thing labeled fear, and it's never questioned what that is.
Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I really identify with that, and you know, we're looking at feeling bad right now, which is perfect because I've also been looking at unconditional acceptance and love, you know, with my Zen coach. So it's just kind of fitting all together. But I really like that idea of whatever it is, using practice to examine it, and then as we examine it, it's not this one thing. I think Scott said it. It starts to fall apart as we examine what you know. As we look at it, in a very physical way. At this point, really looking at the sense. That tell a story somehow. I'm not sure how that works, but somehow these sensations make up this story that then I find myself believe. If I'm not paying attention, I'm just believing it. And they're thoughts too, but often a story is told and it's not even being told in words or very few words. I don't really even catch the words. It's just these sensations going around in my chest or whatever. And all of a sudden, it's this familiar thing that I've always believed until I started questioning it.
So it doesn't necessarily tell the story in words, but the meaning is loud and clear.
Yeah. I was, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. So I was on a 2.5-day field trip Wednesday through Friday with a bunch of kids and and you know, some adults and so on. And it was, first of all, it was great. It was beautiful. The weather was great. But what I noticed was that I didn't feel drained on this retreat at all. Like I have almost every long field trip. I call it a retreat. It kind of lived like a retreat on this field trip. Like almost every field trip I've been on that length before. And I'm pretty clear that it was because self-hate and fear were not dominating. In fact, they were a very small part, hardly anything of what was going on at all. And it was fantastic. So, right, exactly. So I enjoyed it. I loved it. It wasn't like, oh gosh, you know, I just have to survive this, or I'm enjoying part of it and surviving another part of it. But really, I just the whole thing, except for these 20 minutes, which I'll talk about, and even that was fine because I was paying attention. That it was just really enjoyable, great experience. But on the second night, there was this thing that happened. Some of the kids were doing something that wasn't really all that horrible, but as a result, I said, you know, we need to be in our rooms now, not out in the hallways, and some of the boys who were not involved in it got really upset. It was kind of a group consequence, and so they got angry at me, and that story started to be told inside me about, oh, I'm not, a good teacher, and, you know, if I don't really know how to relate to kids, those other teachers would have done this better, I could have had, that whole thing, and it was being told mostly in sensations, not in words, but I was watching it being told. I was watching the whole thing as those sensations were in my chest. And I could tell there was a part of me believing it, and yet, you know, there was observing it of it too. And you know, it just couldn't keep being told after a little while. And it never got its claws into me. And 20 minutes later, I was having a great time with the kids again.
I mean, I'm sure you've recorded about that, yeah?
Yeah, I have, actually. I definitely recorded about that.
It's so huge. I mean, what's so huge about it, Jeff, is that it sounds like, I mean, it wasn't just your average piece of karma blowing through. It sounds like it's kind of one of the core ones that cycles through regularly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so to be able to, and you just did such a commercial for when we pay attention, everything enlightens, right?
Mm-hmm.
So because what's supposed to happen is, oh, you're having this great time and it's all working and, right? And it's all working, you're having a great time because there's so much paying attention happening because it's held in awareness. But very often that can slide into, and this is the way it should be, and I like it this way, and right? And then something happens, and we're supposed to go, oh, no, here it is again, you know, and this is the, which is what you described started to happen. But it sounds like you were in that place that Sherry talks about as the most helpful place in practice, which is that you were in that front row seat, where the identification is happening, but you're watching it. So all the sensations are there. All the, you know, even there's a sense of like being pulled into starting to believe it. But in that ability to stay aware through all of it, it never gets to drag you in. And you're building a muscle ready, you know, stronger even for the next time that it blows through, which it will.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I thought about that exact thing. That it's the most helpful place. And you know what was, first of all, we were on the second week of the feeling bad bamboozle last week, and the assignment, I believe, was to pay attention to how the con is set up to you know, listen to feeling bad. And so that's what I was watching for. And it was so great that even though I couldn't do as much recording and listening on the field trip, There was still enough awareness that as this was going on, this is what I really, one of the things I really love about it is that it wasn't just after the fact, which is wonderful too, but it was while it was happening, I was aware that this is the con being set up, and I'm right here watching it, and there was, you know, the negative feelings in quotes, whatever, about not liking that this thing happened with the kids. But there was also at the same time seeing it as an opportunity. And I loved that that was happening right then, you know, while I was in that cabin with the kids. It was just so great.
Yeah, congratulations. That was so fun.
Yeah. It is. Thank you. It was amazing to me to be with the kids and to have awareness of the sensations at the same time. I don't know that I've ever that clearly, you know, been in the midst of something like that, and you know, with a bunch of kids, and you know, have. So there's all this stuff to go on, you know. I gotta make sure the medications are taken care of, you know, and this, that, and the other thing. But I really believe it's because, you know, just doing a bunch of practice, and that was what I was focusing on that week.
Yeah.
I've been doing recording and listening about that kind of stuff every day, and even though I wasn't doing as much on the field trip. You know, I was still, you know, doing what I could to keep up with things as much as I could.
Exactly. It takes me back to the conversation we were having with Carolyn at the beginning, where it's that place of, you know, so if we think of it in terms of like something like weightlifting, right? So let's say you have a routine where you lift weights every day, and so, you know, your muscles are getting in really good shape, and then you're off doing something else where you're away, you're on a trip, so you're not going to do your normal weightlifting.
Mm-hmm.
But those muscles are still there, available to you. You're still reaping the benefits of all of that practice that's come before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was so great to have it kick in at that point. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Jen, thank you. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say thank you. Yeah, thank you for, again, it feels like it's a theme tonight, but, you know, for calling and sharing that, because it just seems so helpful, as Michael said in the beginning of the show, to hear the concrete examples that people are practicing with, because I think that really helps it come alive for all of us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
Thanks very much.
Thank you so much. Okay. Good night.
Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Jeff. Another fabulous conversation, Jen.
I know.
And I could go on about that.
And
we have another caller here.
Okay.
All righty. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Rita from Southern California.
Hey, Rita.
Hi, Jen. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
Hi, I'm calling about a relationship question, and I think it's kind of good timing with the class coming up. I had kind of a cool thing that happened. I was listening to an open-air archive, and the line that I got from it, the last line, Sherry and Michael were talking about unconditional love. Just be unconditional love and let life lead.
Mm.
And that was so beautiful. And I had a fleeting thought on my way there that wouldn't it be nice if this certain thing happened? And it just was a fleeting thought. It left my mind. And I ended up by certain changes in circumstances to meet this person I had the fleeting thought about, who I did not know, and it was a man who lived in the area, and we hit it off, and we started seeing each other, and it seemed pretty divinely timed.
Yeah.
And really great, and then it flipped, and it became sort of traumatizing, and I had to stop. You know, I had to stop the relationship because I could see that it was just an insurmountable wall of suffering that was ahead of me and a hole that I would have to dig myself out of constantly. The problem was that the perception was so wrong. I would say something I thought that was loving and kind, and he would flip, and he, you know, he ended up, you know, thinking I was the opposite of what I was actually feeling. So I was wondering how it seemed like life was leading, and then it led to this really kind of, you know, traumatic ending. And I wondered, you know, am I supposed to see how I was maybe trying to get him to like me and I was manipulating it and that flipped him out, or did I start going into all that?
You know, it's so interesting, Rita, what you're talking about, because it's that place of, and just at the, I can't quite catch it, but just on the edges of my awareness, I'm remembering a quote or something we had recently that came through about this, but I can't even begin to quote it or where it was from, but but something pointing at, you know, there's this sense of, you know, life leading, or, you know, if you're Christian, kind of the God, you know, divine intervention, or whatever your religious tradition calls it, right? There can be that sense of it when it's in that way that you describe, like, wow, I have this passing thought of wouldn't it be great if, and then that happens, and it just feels like, wow, you know, that was meant to be, and that was divinely, you know, it was just, there it was. And
I just thought I was, you know, at the epitome of my practice, you know, and I was like, yeah.
Right,
you know?
Right. And then when things start to happen that we wouldn't really choose and don't like so much and feel kind of hard, there can be the temptation to sort of have this, well, that's not life leading. And yet, you know, what a huge place to consider. And I don't know, this could be a leap, you know, at this point, but that it's all a gift. And again, a little bit like we were talking about with Carolyn in that first conversation, I don't know if you were listening at that point, but, you know, that place where I said, you know, you would say to a really close friend, gosh, if I could change the circumstances, I would, which on the one side is true. You know, it is hard to see our people we love go through hard things. And yet, from the biggest place of respect and adequacy and, you know, wanting truly the best for someone in the biggest sense, would we take away the things from them that are difficult and even something that we would call traumatizing? You know, maybe not.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well then my question is, I've heard Sherry say this to people who are like, they want to get out of a relationship, and she says, why don't you just stay and see what you are to learn in it? But that doesn't apply to every situation, does it? I mean, if
absolutely
the relationship...
Absolutely not.
Okay.
And the reason it could, you know, it could in the sense that, and this is the hardest thing for us to get in practice, content is truly irrelevant. It is
okay.
Truly irrelevant.
It's hard to get that one because I've been going around with content for 2 weeks.
Yeah. Well, I mean, most of us go through in our entire lifetimes.
Well, I mean, just on this deal.
Yeah. So in that sense, stay in the relationship, don't stay in the relationship, you know, stay in the job, don't stay in the job, move, don't move. It's irrelevant in terms of the big picture. But what conditioning does with that is, okay, so then you just have to stay in this relationship and, you know, then find your, you know, your way to joy. And, of course, that's just conditioning as well, right?
Okay, yeah.
So in the same way that leaving the relationship is not going to end suffering, neither is staying in the relationship going to end suffering. Ending suffering is a process different from content. So the process of ending suffering is a process that we practice regardless of the content of our lives,
regardless
of the circumstances that we're in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, so if we want to leave a relationship, great. Leave the relationship and pay really close attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the letdown is there was so much good about it until the flip started happening.
Yeah. And that I'll bet you anything, there's so much to see in that, right? That, I mean, I'll just project. I have no, you know, you can look to see what it is for you, but but that place of like, oh, my gosh, but it was going to be so good, and, you know, it was so meant to be, and how could it have gone wrong? Was it me? I mean, but no, but what, that very
my projecting,
likely,
is he projecting? You know, I'm
right, exactly.
Yeah.
And if I could just figure it out, then maybe I could get it back on track, right? That all of that very likely is a process that shows up not just in relationships, but all over your life. And that's the thing that becomes so amazing about, it was Shannon that we were talking about, when practice is the most, is sort of the foundation of our lives, everything becomes profoundly okay, because everything that happens in our life is an opportunity to see, to watch, to notice, to see what process is happening, to notice the unexamined beliefs and assumptions, to be able to redirect attention, like we were talking about earlier with, you know, about being in relationship with the mentor, you know, all of those things, so that ultimately that's the most important thing to us.
Yes, I've been really spending a lot more time with practice. And one thing that kind of came up for me on this was, you know, looking at my behavior and, you know, seeing that maybe I'm trying to appear nice to sort of manipulate the situation. And I'm not really just being myself. It's not that I want to be nice or mean or whatever. I just am not being myself.
Right.
And when someone comes off as nice, you know, the first thing you want to do is get away from them.
Right, exactly.
You
that's
know?
So true. Yeah.
So
and,
I'm looking at that a little bit.
And that's so great, Rita, when we can look at those places without self-hatred. Without a need to fix Rita, okay, now I see what's wrong with her. And now here's what we need to do. But instead, just keep it in that place of awareness of, wow, that's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just keep watching.
Okay.
Knowing that, you know, who Rita is authentically, you know, who Michael is authentically, who Jen is authentically, who, it's all that same suchness that's good. You know, I'm sure you've heard Sherry talk about before, your goodness is already established.
Yeah.
So that's not in question. We know you're good.
Yeah.
You know, we know you're good. So now it all just becomes an opportunity to see how, well, then what's going on? What's the deal with the suffering? How is that happening?
Yeah, and also to see maybe that's just conditioned mind beating me up for being loving and it didn't work out. So, you know, well, maybe you weren't really loving. Maybe you were just trying to be liked and, you know, just to see how I really felt.
And not to conclude anything. Right? Maybe it was.
Okay.
Maybe I was just completely Rita and perfectly loving, and it just wasn't going to work out, and it didn't work out.
Yeah.
Maybe there was no meaning to it. Who knows?
And I'm just going to just really support myself in it and not beat myself up through the whole thing.
Yeah, not exactly as you said a minute ago, not let conditioning beat you up. To be that compassionate presence that intervenes and supports Rita instead of allows her to be beat up. Yeah. Yeah. So good.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Jen. I really appreciate everything you said.
Yeah. Again, very, very valuable for all of us. So thank you for calling in.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you.
Okay.
Have a good night. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Rita. And I have a big smile on my face, Jen. It's just such a great privilege and pleasure to be here with everybody, sharing their process and courage, and it's fabulous.
It really is. I was wondering if we could maybe have overtime.
Overtime.
I guess we'll have to wait for next week.
Yes.
We'll practice.
And thank you, Jen, for showing up and being here. It's great to have you here and your practice and skill and willingness. It's just a huge blessing to me and to all of us.
Yeah, so fun. Yep, we're so lucky. Thanks, Michael.
Yes. Thank you, Jen.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night.